Hi there, we are James and Dan, two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, if you suffered an injury in an accident and would like a free case review, make sure you call the super team at Daspit Law Firm. Free consultations are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 713-322-HURT. That's 713-322-HURT. Or you can go to the website, DaspitLaw.com.
Most interactive sports talk show in Houston continues now.
What's happening, Paul? Most interactive show, and I really enjoy that aspect of it. Y'all keep it up.
Get involved in the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776. Here's Paul Gallant.
The Houston Texans wrapped up their draft class over the weekend, and the Astros lost 2 of 3 to the Philadelphia Phillies. A series that featured two games played on national TV. On Friday, they were once again an Apple TV broadcast. And then on Sunday, they were an ESPN broadcast. I have multiple times explained that I do think that baseball as a whole has a lot of problems. I think the pitch clock is a good fix for it. But I think the problem for it now, as far as the entirety of the sport, is that it does a very poor job of creating national conversation. Baseball is largely a localized sport. So naturally, any television network that is partnered with baseball is going to try their best to find a way to make baseball conversation on a national level a thing again. But it's easier said than done. There's 162 games in a season, and how many people can truly have a feel for the major teams in baseball? How many games can you watch and really have a true feel for who's good and who isn't? And I think it's why a lot of us get very frustrated with national reporters who seem to focus exclusively on the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, etc. One of the ways that baseball could theoretically change this is if they have good national baseball broadcasts. And I got to say, they are doing a horrible job with that. Last night's Sunday night baseball broadcast was a disaster. Low energy. And they kept trying their hardest to do different things that you would think would work from time to time. They had a moment where Kyle Schwarber's in the outfield and they were interviewing him. That actually was good, but there aren't many Kyle Schwarber's across baseball. There aren't. People with big personalities who are actually willing to say a thing or two. In the middle of last night's game, I want to say the third inning, the Sunday night baseball broadcast decided that they were going to do an interview with Hector Neris in the bullpen. The interview started off like this, and honestly, at first, I thought, okay, this could be fun. They're coming back from a commercial break, and you just hear one of the Sunday night baseball broadcasters saying, yeah, you can keep singing.
Keep singing, I don't care.
On the night we sing the night.
That's Hector Neris out there in the bullpen.
It started off like that, and I was like, okay, maybe we're going to hear some authentic, fun moments with Hector Neris, who seems like a larger-than-life personality based off of that little clip right there. But the interview continued, and it sort of highlighted just how, I think, bad these national broadcasts are for baseball, specifically on ESPN. This interview continued for a painfully long amount of time. Here is an interaction between Sunday Night Baseball and Neris that took place not too long afterwards.
After the bullpen, like the scene was there, they stayed on the game and started to be connecting.
Yeah, you're doing a great job breaking the game down. I want to know what Hector Neris is doing to prepare for what might be a relief role tonight. What are you thinking about?
I'll be like, my mind be positive to be on the game, like follow my routine every day, like stay consistent, like watch everybody about, like how we're hitting today, where they follow the ball, and come to have a more idea. It's part of the game. They stay here. I always try to dominate the game, too.
Here's the good thing. The relief pitcher role is better than being the first base coach, because you had him going to second base.
Hey, it's true. It's true.
So he tries to make it, the Sunday Night Baseball broadcaster tries to make this as fun as he possibly can. But you couldn't understand what Neris was saying. And on top of that, this broadcaster is asking him questions like, what's in your brain? What are you thinking? And I would imagine asking that question to somebody who is first language Spanish is going to lead to a very strange answer. So the interview ends, and it's just painfully awkward at the end, too, because they could clearly tell that they had made a terrible choice in asking Hector Neris to do an interview from the bullpen in the middle of the third inning. It ended like this.
All right, so right now you're really just hanging out. You're watching the Phillies hitters to get an idea of what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Now I know like something different about yesterday and today. They swing more today.
They're swinging. They're being more aggressive. All right, we're going to revisit with Hector Neris. Let's say the fifth inning, Hector, will join you to see where you are and where the team is, where the game is, and whether you'll think about getting into the game at that point. All right, we'll check back with you in the fifth.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I don't think they came back to him in the fifth inning, and I don't blame them for it. If I were a producer for that ESPN broadcast of Sunday Night Baseball, I would have wanted to blow my brains out hearing all 4 minutes of that. It was one of the worst things that I've ever heard in the middle of a sports game. And it's partly because Hector probably didn't understand half of what was being asked. They were such vague, generic questions like, what goes through your mind when you're in the bullpen? And factor in the rest of the broadcast, which featured some big picture talk about the Astros and where they stand. When you're watching these games every single night, a nightly routine with the AT&T Sportsnet call, or maybe you're listening to them on the flagship or something like that, you like people that actually know what the hell they're talking about with the team that you watch on a nightly basis. That's what you're looking for. That's what you want. And then you get these national broadcasts, and it's just janky. It's low energy. It's inside jokes that you don't understand. So I thought to myself, maybe there's another broadcast of this that's better. ESPN2 does another broadcast at the same time. It's like the Manning cast that they have for Monday Night Football. But this features Michael Kay, the Yankees play-by-play guy, and Alex Rodriguez. And it was just as bad. So Jake Meyers is at the plate. Jake Meyers hits a home run, but they've gone away from the cameras having the Jake Meyers home run up, and they're just showing A-Rod standing in front of a giant television screen doing power rankings of the top five teams in baseball.
They're really doing it with starting pitching. Some of their best players are hurt, and they're still coming out playing really, really well. And that city's on fire right now. Number four.
See? All right, so Meyers with a home run.
A little see ya.
3-1.
We'll
see ya.
Let's see ya. Let's see ya. Let's check it out.
After Hensley lined out on the first pitch, this is Meyer's second home run of the season. So what did he hit out?
Oh, a little breaking ball. Little cement mixer. Didn't do much. Right in the sweet spot. And in that ballpark, all you got to do is get the head out.
What do you think? You hit 750 if you played every game there?
760.
760?
Yeah, 10
okay.
more. 10
All
more.
Right. Yeah.
It's so bad. It's absolutely terrible. The K-Rod broadcast, the Sunday Night Baseball broadcast, the Apple TV broadcast. It's just terrible. Baseball can't win because they can't get their top talent, the top talent in sports media, to do a broadcast that's actually good. I the rest of the game I had on mute for both. I went back to the original ESPN broadcast and I just put it on mute. I'm like, I can't deal with this anymore. It's terrible. It's low energy. It's boring. And then if you're going to have national baseball conversations, actually have engaging, entertaining ones, as opposed to Michael Kay and Alex Rodriguez standing in front of a television screen doing power rankings. Come on. Awful. Awful, awful, awful. Mr. Brostash is arguing that nothing is worse than the Joe Tessitore, Booger McFarland Monday Night Football crew those couple of years with Jason Witten. Strong argument to be made. At least Joe Tessitore had energy. These broadcasts are completely void of energy. And you wonder, how can you do this? How can you have a good national baseball broadcast? The answer is simple. You need to have a voice that people recognize in Joe Buck. Otherwise, just don't do it. Maybe make all of this localized. How about instead, for a national broadcast of a game, you could have alternate calls? So one half inning or one full inning, it's going to be one team. The other inning, it's going to be another team, because you're probably going to get some interesting insight from, I would imagine, the local broadcast teams, who are definitely going to ham things up a little bit if they're going on a national broadcast for the first time too. That would be a lot better than having some people that are vaguely aware of the entirety of the sport going on and delivering that low energy poop fest that they did. Apple TV, ESPN, ESPN2, all of it this weekend was trash. It was terrible. That was like that. Those moments right there, like, they're paying millions of dollars to provide you with those moments.
Yeah, there's two things. A, like, the fact that this is Michael Kay's and A-Rod's second job. Like, second baseball broadcasting job. Mm-hmm. This is, like, what they do every once in a while. That's tough. And then, also, with the alternate calls, I mean, they're already using ESPN and ESPN2 to show the same baseball game. They can just have, hey, the Phillies calls on ESPN, the Astros calls on ESPN2. Boom. There we go.
That would work perfect.
Instead of the K-Rod broadcast.
But they, I guess, think that some people are tuning in to watch a national broadcast. And I don't know that that's ever really been the case, but I think that every single year, baseball seems to feel more localized as opposed to a sport where there is an actual national conversation about it. And that Sunday Night Baseball broadcast just sounds worse and worse and worse every single year. That's on the producers. They have to figure out what the hell they're doing there. Anyway, I'm sure we all hated it. If you were watching those Astros-Phillies games over the weekend, kind of BS that between the Astros and Phillies in the last, how many games are we talking about? Six games in the World Series, three games over the weekend. We have had the Astros local team on TV calling just one of the last 9 games between these two teams. Kind of boring. Kind of ridiculous. And here we are. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in as well. You can tweet me at Galant Says. OG from H-Town on twitch.tv/ESPN975 says, solution, Spanish or Japanese broadcast. Big D energy right there. You are 100% right on that. We needed to have a Japanese call in Sunday Night Baseball last night.
We just need to learn Japanese and then, yeah.
Yeah, that would help. The Texans finished up their draft class over the weekend. What are the prevailing narratives that have come out about said draft class? And which of those narratives are true? Which of them are false? We'll discuss next. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Locked in with the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant.
Kansas City, how we doing? Houston Texans are making moves. The Philadelphia Eagles have traded the 62nd pick to the Houston Texans. And with the 62nd pick in the 2023 NFL Draft, the Houston Texans select Juice Scruggs, center, Penn State. Go Texans.
it's kind of funny that Brian Cushing, who was popped twice by the National Football League for violating the league's policy on performance-enhancing substances, a man described by former Texans fullback Fonte Leach as always juiced, end quote, announced that the Texans picked a man by the name of Juice. That's hilarious. Obviously, they had no idea it was going to happen like that. Cushing was on standby for them to make a pick in the second round. They trade up into the second round, and Cushing announcing a guy named Juice got drafted. I'm sorry. I thought it was funny. Nothing against Brian Cushing. I really don't care what an NFL player puts in their body. It's a hard sport. If you're willing to deal with whatever side effects and consequences come of taking that substance, then you know what you signed up for. Certain shrivelings or other things maybe not working so well going forward. If you're willing to do that to be the best player you can be, have at it. I'm not going to tell you to stop.
In risk over overtrained athlete syndrome. That mm-hmm. too. Really put it all out on the line.
Overtrained AF. Yeah. So that's the pick the Texans made, the first one that they made on Friday night. The center out of Penn State, Juice Scruggs. They draft Tank Dell, wide receiver, out of Houston in the third round. As the draft went on, some of the other picks that they made. I thought for the most part, solid draft class, but honestly, I can't tell you anything about what these guys are going to do. All I know is that there was clearly a priority for this organization to bolster the interior of their offensive line. They drafted two centers to bolster the linebacker core. They get one from Alabama in the middle of the draft. And now we're going to see how it all works out and if D'Amico Ryans is as good as at being a leader of men as he has clearly built himself to be. There are some narratives that have come out about what the Texans did during the draft. I hate that word, the N word, narrative. It's a really annoying word in the world of sports. It's one that's consistently brought up by players who might be sensitive about something that's being said about them. You get it a lot. But I wanted to go through all of the narratives that are coming out about the Houston Texans after this draft came to a conclusion late on Saturday. The first narrative is one that we discussed briefly on Friday. The idea that ownership forced the team to draft CJ Stroud. Is that true or false? I can't rule out false. I also can't rule out true. So I am waffling a little bit here, but I could very well buy into the idea that ownership said, we're taking a quarterback and we'll make it up for you by allowing you to trade back up to pick number three to get your guy in Will Anderson. Another narrative. I don't buy this one. It's gotten very annoying. Someone on one of my YouTube posts that I made about the NFL draft left the comment of, clearly, this is why you have a background in journalism and not business. And I'm like, well, yes, I do have a background in journalism, but okay, Hardo, you're Boogerballs42069 commenting on a YouTube post at Saturday at 5:30. So let's relax a little bit. But there are some people who are saying, actually, the Texans didn't trade up that much to get Will Anderson. Actually, they were trading up to get CJ Stroud. And this has been pushed by a lot of prominent NFL pundits who I think are trying to defend the price that the Texans paid to trade up to number three. That narrative is BS. They traded a lot. Too much? Honestly, I can't say, because if the pick works out, it's a great pick. If the pick doesn't work out, it's a disaster. But this idea that they were trading for CJ Stroud in reality by making that trade up. No, they had the second overall pick. They took CJ Stroud. Then they traded up to number three to take Will Anderson. It is definitively not that.
No, I kind of disagree. I do disagree. You pick C.J. Stroud so you don't get in a bidding war with number three.
But they acted like this was some galaxy brain move by the Texans.
Oh, no, it's just like it's like what you would do. Like it's like the most basic thing of if you were going to trade up, you take the most valuable guy first. So the only thing less is the less valuable guy. And so now you're only trading up for the less valuable asset.
That is true. But they already had the second overall pick.
Yeah.
And I think it's more likely that in that spot, they would have wanted to trade out of it than to trade up to the number two overall pick. So I think it's kind of strange after the fact that people are like, well, actually, that was the trade for C.J. Stroud. Okay, it's still expensive.
Yeah, it's like a base. It's like, you know, what you trade up when you're trading up for a quarterback.
Yeah, it is. But let's not act like there are these big geniuses for taking Will Anderson with pick three when they took C.J. Stroud at two, and that the trade was actually all about C.J. Stroud.
No, I mean, I don't think they're geniuses, right? I think that's just like, yeah, that's common sense of like, yeah, we don't want to have to trade more than the Titans. We don't want the guy that the Titans want to get in a bidding war.
Some people right now are commenting on the Twitch, twitch.tv. You are wrong. It was definitely to avoid a battle for CJ at three. I don't think there was that big of a battle for CJ at three. I don't. Maybe you could argue that all of those stories that were coming out about CJ Stroud, the S2 test and all that things were to potentially make it so that Stroud would fall in the draft to some team. But I don't think that there was that much of a bidding war to trade up to number three with the Arizona Cardinals. I don't. Could be wrong on that front, but I think we need to sit back and stop acting like they were thinking like eight steps ahead, like it's Bradley Cooper in Limitless.
Well,
that pill, and he's super genius. Yeah, we actually have tricked everybody by drafting C.J. Stroud second overall and trading up for Will Anderson.
Well, there's
this really brilliant move. It's not. It was just a trade.
Yeah, no, I yeah, that's what I'm saying, but that's what the trade was for. Because there's the Adam Schefter report, like right before the draft, that the Texans were like kind of expected Stroud to fall, and so they'd only have to trade from like 12 to 6 or something. And so then when it's like, oh wait, if he's at 3, then we're gonna have to trade up a lot to get him at 3. Well, let's pick him at 2. So now we're only trading up, competing with.
But just listen. We should transcribe this segment that we just did right there, because what you're saying makes sense, Sean.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying makes sense as well. But people are hearing all of that, turning it into this amazing move.
No, that is just the battle red tinted glasses that people wear after every single draft. is that they're just excited they got both guys. So now it turns into a blow fest. It really is. Just like the most common, like any freaking dude with a fantasy football background, like anyone who's ever played Madden, anyone who's ever played fantasy football could figure this out.
Right. And it's not a genius move.
No.
But some people, to defend the move, are acting like this is this brilliant move. And it just wasn't. It wasn't. They traded a lot to get that pick.
It was just a fine, like, you traded up to get both those guys.
Yes.
Whichever one that you want to say the trade was for,
yes.
Fine. But the order in which they picked, like, does say that, like, there was strategy in the order that they picked them.
This is giving me a headache. It's just that's enough people had this mindset.
I can see why
online.
You don't have a background in business.
I don't. Have a background in business, and I'm proud to not have a background in business if this is what that guy's trying to spin. Like, what a brilliant move. They still traded a lot. You still spent a lot of money. What are you talking about?
It also is funny that it's like you need a background in business to understand just the most basic things.
I honestly hope that person stubs their toe very hard today. Like very hard. Like steps on a Lego, maybe trips. Anyway, another narrative about what the Houston Texans did over the weekend. They're panderers. Sean, this is a theory that you floated out there. And look, we
That was in confidence, but yes.
Fair enough. We were the first show, though, to suggest pandering. We were. With the D'Amico Ryans hire, we were like, yeah, a little pandering going on here. Not necessarily a bad thing, but there was a little bit of pandering in hiring a former player to be your head coach. You're trying to drum up excitement. Hey, you did that. And you further draw up excitement by drafting a quarterback second overall. You further drum up fan excitement by drafting a University of Houston Cougar. You further drum up excitement by for D'Amico Ryans by pandering to him and allowing him to trade up and draft Will Anderson. A lot of pandering going on. I buy into that narrative. There is some pandering going on.
Yeah, just everyone seems to get what everyone got what they wanted. They wanted different things, but everyone got what they wanted. We got some more UH players. We got a quarterback, and D'Amico Ryans gets a defensive piece. Boom. All it took was our own 2024 first round pick and pick number 33 in the second round. Boom.
They should have drafted Clayton Tune, though. Tank Dell, Clayton Tune. CJ Stroud ever gets hurt,
you don't want a quarterback controversy.
That's true.
The first time CJ Stroud throws an interception.
Oh boy. Well, you already have that with Case Keenum.
Well, yeah.
He's true. Coming home. He's coming home. Tell the world he's coming home. A narrative about the Texans draft class. They care too much about morals. This was a line from Nick Caserio. And I'm not going to lie. There's definitely some teeth here, too. Caserio said of the players that the Texans drafted on Thursday and Friday, Juice Scruggs and Tank Dell, our four players are good players, but they're good human beings. And you go back to that Friday press conference and just look at the amount of times faith, belief were mentioned. I do think that there is something to the idea that the Texans aren't as far removed from all Jack Easterby culture, blah, 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 as we would like them to be. So I do buy into that. So a couple of narratives about the Houston Texans draft class on the way out. It is done. I'm Paul Gallant. It is the Paul Gallant Show. 713-780-3776 to call in and text in if you have any thoughts on that. Jose Abreu struggles at the plate. The Astros' offensive struggles over the weekend also on the table. For conversation, don't go anywhere on the most interactive sports talk show in town.
ESPN 97.5. Houston's most interactive and possibly radioactive sports talk show continues now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Texans made 8 picks in the NFL draft over the weekend. A lot of trades by Nick Caserio. Started off with 12 going into it. They make 8 selections. So, as we look back at the draft, other things did happen that were noteworthy. I think the AFC South is going to be a lot more fun than in years past, at least for the short term, because the Colts drafted Anthony Richardson and the Titans traded up to pick number 33 on Friday to draft Will Levis. So, at the very least, you have a reason to watch every single one of the quarterbacks in the division for the first time in a while. I can't remember the last time where you could say 1 through 4, you are intrigued by a quarterback under center for every single team in this god-awful division. Because this division has been embarrassing for a long period of time. And I know, I'm a bit of a cake eater when it comes to my football love. I grew up watching the Patriots. I remember coming down here and going to like an AFC South Thursday night football game. Texans, Jaguars, Titans, Jaguars. There's a lot of crap games that the AFC South has put on. It essentially was the Tuesday night action of the NFL for a very long time. So now, with quarterbacks that are first-round picks or first-round adjacent, and I guess Malik Willis still has a chance in Tennessee. Probably not, though. Probably not. I think he might be pretty much out of a job entirely.
Considering the GM who hired him got fired after he played and...
Yeah.
And then they drafted another quarterback. Yeah, I think things are done. Also, 2016 AFC South, you had Brock Osweiler. You had Marcus Mariota.
Oof.
You had Andrew Luck.
Huh? Yeah. There was some intrigue about him? Mariota at that point in 2016.
Yeah, that was his second year.
Uh-huh.
And then Blake Bortles.
Oh, God.
So Bortles, Osweiler, Luck, and Mariota before we knew he was bad. Yeah. That's as good as I can get in the AFC South, recently.
It is so bad. How bad?
Maybe there's a Deshaun, Andrew Luck year that they... Yeah, maybe 2017 with Bortles, Luck, Deshaun, and still Mariota.
It's always been at least one outlier. Always. Always. Like, it's been a rough division when it comes to quarterbacks.
Manning, Garrard, Schaub,
That would have been probably it. You're laughing right now, but... Yeah. Gerard had one really good year.
Yeah.
Vince Young
had a couple, one
you're
or two.
Excited
good years.
About him. Yeah. He's he's relevant nationally on a level a lot of young quarterbacks weren't. And Matt Schaub wasn't that far removed from some historic. I think that would have probably been
probably
right about
been,
then.
Yeah.
08, 09, where he's setting records. And Peyton Manning, his head hadn't fallen off yet. So, yeah.
And it was the regular season.
Right. I think they made it to a Super Bowl. So that's it. It's the AFC South has sucked for the longest time. It's just a boring, completely boring waste of space division. One of the teams is going to move to bleeping England. Like, it's not great. It's not great. The Jacksonville Jaguars. Other things that happened over the course of the draft. The announcement of Tank Dell was made by some little YouTuber. Is he a YouTuber, Sean? Are you familiar with his work? Is he a Twitcher?
He was credited as content creator.
Content creator, so he must be some little TikTok bastard.
But
TikTok influencer.
When I looked him up, his YouTube is the first thing that pops up, and he has 12 million subscribers on YouTube.
I want to kill myself. He has 12 million?
He has 875,000 Instagram followers.
I want to kill myself.
You want to hear him make the Tank Dell
thing? I have 2,120,000 on YouTube. What's the point?
Going to the second decimals.
What's the point? What am I doing? What am I doing this for? He's got that many?
Yeah. Ryan Trahan? Trahan? I don't know how
to pronounce it. And he didn't even do anything fun when he went up there. God. Here's this little, you know what? Here he is. He's announcing the pick. I hate him.
Howdy. Let's go Texans.
Howdy.
The Los Angeles Rams have traded the 69th pick to the Houston Texans. With the 69th pick in the 2023 NFL Draft, the Houston Texans select Nathaniel Dell, wide receiver out of Houston.
Doesn't even know his name is Tank. Is he from
Houston? Howdy.
Howdy. Oh, wait. He is from Houston because he said howdy. My bad. That is as Texas as it gets. It's pick 69. You're a YouTube star. And you can't even say nice while making the pick. Amateur hour. I hate the world. I just hate it. I'm so jealous. And I know I'm a small, petty person. I hate that kid. I hate him. Hate him. Hate
howdy.
Him. I hate him so much. I hate him so much. Oh, my God. He's got 11 million followers on YouTube. What does he do? Like, unbox gifts?
Like, howdy.
What kind of content is he creating?
Howdy.
I might have to go. If I do a Twitch/YouTube show tonight, I might just have to go analyze his content and then see how long it takes me to want to, like, blow my brains out looking at his content.
He seems very
talentless. Yes.
I was going to say he has a lot of charisma.
Sure, he does. Who else had a lot of charisma? Ooh. In the next segment, there were two people that I thought really shined while making picks, but one for all of the wrong reasons. In fact, he might have said something that could be considered hate speech here in Houston. You'll hear that next. It's the Paul Gallant Show wrapping things up after this.
ESPN. 97.5. This is the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant.
Texans made 8 picks over the course of this past weekend's NFL draft. We'll see what they end up being. Anyone who is giving a grade on that draft is talking out of their ass. Whether good or bad. The funny thing is, most people, even if they did criticize some of the moves that the Texans made, trading up, or criticize some of the selections, pretty much everyone is going to give the Texans, at minimum, a B or higher. Because that's how draft grading works. A's galore, and no one gets worse than the C-.
I saw on SportsCenter, like maybe 5-10 minutes ago, they were doing which team improved the most during the draft with Dan Orlovsky, and I saw a Texans logo.
Hell yeah. Let's go. But no one knows. Legitimately.
Well,
no
Dan Orlovsky knows.
Anyone who is acting super confident about it out of this weekend, I think is full of it, even if they are people that actually break it down for a living. And I think most of those people know not to go that far because you could potentially open yourself up for freezing cold takes getting you years from now. I think no one's ever going to give an F again after the 2012 Seahawks draft got an F, and it's one of the best drafts that we've seen in the past 15 years. As far as the Astros, they lost 2 or 3 over the weekend to the Phillies, and they left a lot of runners in scoring position. I believe as a whole, they were 2 for 19 with runners in scoring position. And Jose Abreu, the subject of much scorn, we'll see if he's ever able to get things going the way that the Astros thought he would when they gave him that contract, which does seem like a pretty massive overpay. You're paying for a contact hitter that's not even hitting for that much contact, who grounded into a double play and killed a bases-loaded first-inning rally with no outs. As far as the rest of the NFL draft, I was in the last segment expressing my discontent and dismay and debating whether or not I should even continue to work in media, finding out that that little YouTube TikTok star that announced the Texans pick has 11 million followers on YouTube. Like, I just...
Let's go Texans!
Howdy! Jason McCourty of the Good Morning Football show announced a pick for the Tennessee Titans. He used to play for them. He was wearing Oilers gear, which I felt was stolen valor, and he did his best to troll the entirety of the crowd in Kansas City, a la Kyle Brandt did while announcing the Bills selection the years before. Here is Jason McCourty at the podium.
I've had some fond memories here. I remember being at Arrowhead Stadium in 2018 when we won the AFC Championship game. And we went to the Super Bowl, and Patrick Mahomes was one trophy short. Yes, I said it. I'm sorry. But now it's all about the Tennessee Titans.
Let's pause
and
for a
we
second.
Are the real team.
It's weird that he is claiming that he is a Tennessee Titan when his best days were with the New England Patriots, but whatever. That's fine.
He kicks off bragging about the Patriots beating Patrick Mahomes his first year starting, and then he says that he was one trophy short.
What does that mean?
What does that mean?
I think he was trying to say something else there, and he probably had a bit of a brain fart, as I do all the time on this show.
What? No.
All the time.
You?
I like that you're being nice right now, but it's coming off as sarcastic.
Okay, let's get back to one of the McCourtys, whichever McCourty this is.
Jason McCourty continues as he's wearing this Oilers jacket and an Oilers shirt while making the pick for the Tennessee Titans after bragging about being a member of the New England Patriots.
Where the Houston Oilers started. You see me rocking it. Tennessee, the home of the best barbecue in the nation. Did I say something? No, not true. No, I take it back. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't mean to offend anybody.
Does Nashville have good barbecue? I know Memphis supposedly has good barbecue, but does Nashville have good barbecue? And for him to do that while wearing the Houston Oilers and talking about Tennessee as a whole state, I know they are the Tennessee Titans, so technically they can claim Memphis as their other city, I guess. But, like Nashville's got hot chicken. Hot chicken's awesome. I love hot chicken. But that's not barbecue. That's not barbecue. If you're up there, you have to be doing something that's, I think, Nashville-centric, as opposed to essentially being like a half-assed version of Paul Gallant, trolling everybody because of the very many backgrounds that I can claim for myself, depending on the day.
Yeah, this whole bit really jumped the shark, I'll say.
You think?
Yes, I think. Was it Drew Pearson? There's like a Cowboys-Eagles one when the draft was in Philly, and then the next year, like, Jason Fiegels or so, like David Akers, maybe, like clap back, but it was like a kicker, and that was fine. And then, yeah, once Kyle Brandt did it on behalf of the Buffalo Bills, where I didn't know he was a Buffalo Bills
fan. I didn't
either.
And then he ate a buffalo wing at the very end of it.
And that is when I was like, what are we doing? Like, this feels like a, I don't know.
Hey, though, it's the last day of the draft. You do need, and
you
I watched
do something. Yeah.
I watched the whole thing. Ugh. You do need, I know. Mistakes were made. I'm trying to be more attentive to sports on the weekend. I'm trying to fall in love with sports again. So I watched the NFL draft where there's no actual sports being played.
That's a bad start.
Anyway, with what you had over the weekend, Drew Pearson's the OG with the Dallas Cowboys. Pearson came back And this time around, it was a much more tame version of Drew Pearson, which I was a little bit bummed out about. Pearson, I guess, was a Kansas City Chiefs fan growing up, so he wasn't talking trash to them as much as he should have. He wasn't being as loud about being a Dallas Cowboy as he should have.
I think the only, like, you can only do that if you're, they should kind of set this up, but not make it so obviously manufactured where they have, like, people from the NFL morning show do it. Like,
yeah.
Just have,
well, they're trying to get the show some publicity.
Sure, whatever.
They should have done it with Kyle Brannigan, though.
Yeah,
either Kyle Brant,
or like the natural rival of that place. So like it worked in Philly because it was a Cowboy doing it. Mm-hmm. It worked, you know, it can work in other places. If, you know, a Green Bay Packer did it in Chicago. But just like, I don't know. Is there a lot of Titans Chiefs beef other than that, what, the one time they played in the playoff?
Not really.
And then also, if you're Devin McCourty, you can't try to troll on both ends of my career as a Patriot. I won here, and you got to pick one, buddy.
Yeah, you can't claim Patriots affiliation when you're wearing an Oilers shirt. That was his problem. He was pulling a me. He was pulling from too many places that he's lived in. At the very least, I'm self-aware enough to realize that it's ridiculous that I do it.
And one time when I was on Rutgers, we came into Columbia and beat Missouri.
Let's do a quick little garbage time before we hit the road.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
So, when I look for garbage time stories, I generally check the local websites that we have for TV stations in town. And this same headline is across at Channel 2, Fox 26, KHOU, and ABC 13. FBI, don't be alarmed by upcoming nuclear training incident exercise in Houston. The FBI says they'll be conducting a large-scale training exercise in Southeast Houston and Harris County today through Friday. So, that's fun. First off, the FBI telling me anything, I just don't trust them by default.
Just okay. any headline that starts with the FBI : don't be alarmed, I'm like, I should be alarmed.
I'm alarmed already. And look. It's not their fault entirely. It's not FBI Houston's fault. It's FBI Boston's fault. I grew up in Massachusetts, and Whitey Bulger was essentially a made man thanks to the FBI. I have zero faith in the FBI because of it. But anyway, a large-scale multi-agency nuclear incident training exercise, all caps, is going to take place May 1 through 5. Okay, you're the FBI. And no offense, FBI. But are you actually going to be able to pull this off without any massive bleep-ups on your end? I just don't trust you. I don't trust you at all. So I wonder where this is going to affect things the most. Is this just going to create like a ton of traffic? A la when a president's in town and all of a sudden they shut down entire freeways? This sounds miserable.
Also, what could they actually be simulating a real... That's, because they're saying they're simulating a real nuclear incident.
I guess
bleeped. Like what? Like it's like we're bleeped. That's the training.
Pretty much. Yeah. We have nowhere to go underground. You know, there's no cellars here. We're built on a swamp. We're screwed. Where in Houston will it take place? It's going to be in and around NRG Park and Sam Houston 288 to Sam Houston 146 plus I-10 East to Highway 225 and in and around Ellington Field. So Department of Defense, Department of Energy, among other agencies, are going to be there. And I guess these tests have been done around the country since 2012. I still don't trust you. Nothing to see here. Please disperse. It's only a test. It's a nuclear test.
The public is not allowed to observe the training.
Well, what the hell?
Because of the sensitive nature of the training. Again, like, what secrets is there with nuclear training?
Well,
we're screwed.
A lot of people forget about this, Sean, but back in the day, if you got underneath your desk, nuclear weapons couldn't hurt you. You laugh. It's true.
Nuclear. Yeah. You know what? I'm glad we never had to have that theory tested.
We never did. But, you know, nuclear weapons, guess what? Confirmed.
Desks. Respect education.
Desks versus nuclear weapons. Like, desks are technically undefeated.
Okay. Desk and four.
Yeah, it's sort of like NYU football, also undefeated. Desks versus nukes, undefeated. That's going to wrap up the Paul Gallant Show on this Monday, May 1st, 2023. Big thanks to our texters, our callers, our tweeters, and our twitchers. Big thanks to Sean Mapes behind the glass. I am merely Paul Gallant. So long, farewell. Killer Bees are up next. See ya.
Keep singing. I don't care.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more.
Hi there, we are James and Dan, two thoughts of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favorite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot knot.
Very good. I go in here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That's amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.